Darren Donick and Chase continues here on 102.5 The Game. Our show continues with an interview of Adam Rittenberg, who, of course, has been writing for ESPN a long time. He used to specialize in the Big Ten, but now covers all of college football. And he wrote a great piece, and we're into this mode now of in the stoppage and the pause that we're in the sports world, really looking back, catching up on a lot of things that maybe we hadn't been paying attention to as much. And there's been some great sports writing that has come out of it. And Adam wrote a very good piece that I got a chance to look at about Maurice Clairette. All of us who are sports fans who can go back that far, so, you know, our age, everybody's got their memory of Maurice Clairette leading the Ohio State Buckeyes to the national championship, a great game against Miami, and then all the issues that followed with him. Adam caught up with him here recently. A lot of you may have even seen the 30 for 30 on Maurice Clairette that brought to light a lot of the story of that. So, Adam, thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
You start off in the tweet that caught my attention. My life started once the game was over. Maurice Clairette has really become a great success story, taking the mistakes he's made in his life and turning it into a positive and making do with what he's had since he's come out of prison. It's a great story.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I'd written about Maurice back in 2015 when he was getting some attention for speaking to college football teams and other, I guess, other college sports teams around the country. I spent time with him at Alabama as he visited with the Tide and down at Florida State and Jimbo Fisher. And so I got to know him well then. And, you know, we've stayed in touch. And, you know, while he enjoys that work, you know, he really wanted to do something that was more than, you know, just going to a team one day and making a speech and maybe staying in touch with a couple of the players. He wanted to, you know, give back ultimately to his community and help people that, you know, are struggling with some of the things that he went through, you know, as a younger man. And, you know, his next big project, and we kind of address it a little bit in this piece, is that he wants to create a facility where colleges can essentially send their athletes to him to work with. He can work with them on whether it's their mental health or substance abuse or just, you know, planning for, you know, life after, you know, their athletic careers are over, because he says there's just something wrong psychologically with athletes where they don't think about what's going to happen when it's over. And when they're realizing that it's over, they can get into a pretty dark place, which is obviously what happened with him in his life after things ended with Ohio State and the NFL.
It's such an important message, and it seems like so many overlook it, who even ones that make it to the NFL and play for a few years, of how young you actually are when your career is over. Even if you play until you're 25 or 26 or 27 years old, your life is really, in a lot of ways, still just beginning.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I think, again, I think his thing is, there's obviously a you know, if you have a mental health issue, let's address that. Let's be open about that. But then also, how can we, you know, plan for the rest of your life and figure out how to make a contribution? You know, again, and again, Maurice, as you can see in the piece, has some very strong opinions. We didn't get into everything, but he thinks an athlete that merely goes back to his community and runs a sports camp is not doing enough. He wants to encourage athletes to be much more involved in, especially where they're from, like he is in Youngstown, and trying to help people because of the platform they have. And he wants to empower athletes. So it's not just the piece of helping them with, you know, whatever issues they're dealing with and being very open and authentic about that. But how can you help your community because of the platform that you have as a high profile athlete? You know, he knows that he's still best known for being that freshman running back on the Ohio State team and when they won a national title, and then obviously the controversy that happened after that. But he's, you know, trying to use that notoriety to you know, get into some doors that maybe he couldn't get into if he didn't have that platform, to do the much better work and the more impactful work that he's doing now in Youngstown and certainly with some of these college athletes that he talks to.
Yeah, it's very layered because, as you said, it's not just a guy made some bad decisions. There's a lot of things, as you mentioned, mental health issues that he was open about, with depression and the medication he's on, alcoholism that went with it. So there's a lot of experience he's had going to prison and coming out, dealing with the stigma of that. There are things that he has to offer with this perspective. But one thing that I thought was very compelling in the article, Adam, was his bond with Mike Tyson, of all people. And Mike Tyson, yeah, of course, has been in the news. He says he's in great shape. He wants to go fight somebody. But explain that bond. That's an unlikely thing that we would never think of, but those two have really hit it off.
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, I spent a lot of time with Maurice over the years and just stayed in touch with him. And, you know, this piece was essentially, let's spend a day in Youngstown and let's spend a day in Columbus. And we were essentially done with you know, the kind of time that I was reporting. We were back in Columbus, you know, at his home. You know, he was getting ready for this baby shower. He and his fiance had a little boy back in December. This is in November. And then the Mike Tyson thing was completely a surprise. He didn't even know that Mike was in town doing this autograph signing event in Columbus. He gets a call while we're at his house from a couple of his former Ohio State teammates, and Mike Tyson's saying, hey, I want to meet you. I saw you, did an interview that you did. Maybe it was a 30 for 30. You'll get on down here. I want to meet you. So it was just a completely kind of impromptu surprise part of the piece where, and I hadn't realized that Maurice was, had really looked up to Mike Tyson, at least as a boxer growing up, and felt like he played football, you know, the same way that Mike Tyson competed in boxing. And you know, he was really starstruck. I mean, he's met a lot of people with his work over the years, Maurice has, but to see him, you know, meet Mike Tyson and the emotion that Tyson showed in meeting Maurice was a pretty cool moment there. So the second time they'd met. They had met in an after hours club in California back in 2005 or 2006 when they were, I think, both at a lower point in their lives. But it was neat to see them connect. And you know, Maurice called a bunch of people with Tyson on FaceTime and gave him the book he just published. And so it was a very very cool moment for him.
It was funny how you mentioned, you just kind of referenced that Pete Rose happened to be at the same event that those two were at, but I guess they weren't as interested in talking to Pete, even though Pete probably could learn a few things from both of them as well if they all got together.
Well, it was a very emotional, raw scene. It was a little room off of a lobby in a hotel, kind of the VIP room where these guys are before they do their autographs. And I didn't even know he was in there. And we were literally leaving the room after about 30, 40 minutes with Tyson. And Maurice kind of just does a little head nod to the corner. And I look, and there's Pete Rose just sitting there quietly the whole time. So, him and Tyson were kind of the headliners of that autograph signing event. But he was there the whole time when we were there with Tyson. So it was just another kind of like unbelievable moment of that day.
We're talking to Adam Rittenberg of ESPN. And Adam, as we switch gears a little bit of looking ahead and what the college football season could look like, I know Mark Emmert came out yesterday, president of the NCAA, and said that it's going to be up to the school presidents and the state and local officials. It won't be up to the NCAA to have a uniform start when it comes to college athletics, not just football. So where do you stand on everything? Should they get together and either be uniform by conference or the entire NCAA? What are your thoughts?
You know, I get it. I know there's a lot of leadership questions about leadership when that came out yesterday, that why isn't anybody leading here? But the fact is that we don't know a lot of things right now. And it does seem like the impact of the virus is not the same in every state. And, you know, obviously these states are all ultimately, you know, governed themselves by their presidents and by their state officials. You saw the announcement from the California State University system chair yesterday about online classes at most of their institutions all fall. You know, so that's going to affect what happens with the sports. And so while I was a little surprised that Emmert went beyond football, because obviously FBS football is not really governed by the NCAA. It's governed by the leagues. It's sort of separate from the NCAA. But the fact that they're really not taking any sort of stand as far as a uniform start date for all sports is certainly interesting. Now, the conferences I know are in close communication with one another. The commissioners, athletic directors are talking to each other, but I just think there's so much unknown at this point and how it's going to be in certain areas of the country. But here's the thing, and you guys understand this, college football is inherently regional. It always has been, and it always will be. And I think this process with what's going on is going to underscore that. I think it's very likely that we're going to see college football in some regions of the country. I think it's somewhat unlikely we're going to see college football everywhere this fall, or at least on the same timeline in every state, at every FBS institution. I think that's just the reality here. So while people always are going to point out, well, where's the leadership why isn't Mark Emmert stepping in? I think at least when it comes to football, there was never going to be, you know, one person saying this is when we're all going to start. It's just too difficult to manage that.
But I guess the bigger part of this too, and my co-host Darren has brought this up time and time again on this show, it's not just college football being affected. If college football doesn't happen, then you're going to have a lot of other sports at universities that are going away, because college football and the revenue that comes in is so important. So that's where I guess I feel like that there needs to be a committee or somebody stepping in, you know, looking at the importance of having some sort of college football in place that it affects the other sports.
Well, sure. I mean, every athletic director that we've talked to in the last couple of months has said that you know, we need football. We're not even modeling in some cases for no football because it has such a big impact on everything else, and we'd have to make some even tougher decisions than we're already making because they know they're going to be losing millions of dollars even in this fiscal year, and certainly even more in the next fiscal year. And so, I think they're going to do everything they can to get the season in, but I think there's so many questions still about how do you do it safely? How do you test? How do you, what do you do if there's a positive test? What do you do, you know, before a game when someone's traveling from a different region to your region? Do you just stay and essentially play a regional schedule or a league-only schedule? But I do think they're going to do everything they can to at least get football in some respect because of the revenue that it brings in and how it helps those other sports. Now there's going to be sports that are cut. I mean, that's the thing. You know, I know there's been only a few that have been announced publicly, but I think when this is over in 2021 or whenever it's over, you're going to see a number of varsity programs being cut around the country.
Adam Rittenberg on the line with us. In fact, that's where I was going, the announcement yesterday that the MAC put out there. And if what you said holds true and that's what it's going to look like in the fall and it's region by region and some regions aren't playing college football, I do wonder how many more decisions like what the MAC conference came out with yesterday, Adam, will we see where, you know, conference tournaments in other sports, you know, things are going to be limited in other sports at universities in certain conferences. What do you think the fallout would be if indeed there are regions or pockets of the country that don't have a college football season?
Yeah, I mean, I think all these options are on the table. Now, I mean, I was surprised how bold or extreme the MAC announcement was, but I think this it's not the last type of announcement that we'll have here. And you know, they're trying to, you know, do this and maintain as much of the normalcy as they can and trying to do it safely. But I know there's been questions about certain opening games and whether the opponents are going to be changed. And I think, yeah, conference tournaments, especially in the lower profile sports, have to be looked at. Is it worth doing this? Or is it worth just getting through the season with some type of champion, some type of season, even though it's not going to be, you know, normal? I mean, I do a lot with, like, you know, coach hiring and firings and the coaching carousel. I don't think this is going to be a year where we have a lot of coaching changes, because how can you blame a coach for a poor season this year because of the circumstances that everybody's going to be under? So that's just my guess here. So I think just a lot of these things that we think are normal in college sports, coaching changes, conference tournaments, the normal structure of the season, you know, having a non-conference schedule, playing a national schedule, a lot of these things are going to change most likely because of the circumstances and the unknowns right now. I mean, I think some more decisions are going to be made, I think, towards the end of May. I think we'll have a better idea about the college football season during the month of June. But, the whole process, just following it just seems to change every day as far as, you know, when certain states are hitting their peak and what governors are saying about large gatherings and how far out until we have a normal looking sporting event. It just seems to be being pushed back and back and back. And I know there's an urgency for people to play, but this is just the situation that we're in.
Yeah, fair point. And oh, by the way, a lot of coaches taking reduced salary. So it does kind of feel like, you know, dare I say, a sport that has so much turnover, as you said, that you cover, they may be going into a season where, for the most part, everybody gets a pass. I mean, that sounds crazy to say, but that may be the case. We had Herm Edwards on yesterday, and we had a great conversation with him yesterday on the program. And you remember
really?
Adam
so,
when
he's
he,
so boring. I mean,
I know
he never says anything. I'm shocked that he was.
He's shy. I know. Yeah. You have to really kind of pull to get stuff out of him. But we were able to do that, tongue in cheek. Everybody, it was met. That hire at Arizona State was met with a lot of criticism. Like, what are you doing? You know, this guy has been on ESPN for a decade. You know, he's been far removed from the coaching ranks. And look what he did. I mean, we watched that primetime game Saturday night last year where his team at home beat Oregon. They won their bowl game. I mean, it has been a really good hire at Arizona State. You look at what Mac Brown is doing at North Carolina. When Mac Brown got hired, it's like, what? North Carolina is bringing back Mac Brown, and right now they're the number two recruiting class, or three, depending on what service you look at. You know, they're killing it on the recruiting trail. This is North Carolina football, not basketball. What does it say, Adam, that those type of stories where these guys have been brought back and not really didn't get really much of attention, and right now those two guys are doing really good jobs?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think there's momentum in both programs, especially in North Carolina with their young quarterback. And right now, I think they're number two, number three in ESPN's recruiting rankings for 2021. They already recruited well this past year, and that's been part of Mac's legacy throughout his career. And then, you know, yeah, I mean, I was at the Arizona State-Oregon game. I could tell the excitement there around Herm Edwards. And I think he's also recruiting well, also has a young quarterback, you know, who's just in their second year. So they have a chance to take a step forward as a program this year. And so I think what it shows is that, you know, there's not, you know, one type of coach that's always going to work for every school. I'm putting together a piece for next week on the 25 best coaching hires in the last 25 years in college football. And one theme in going through the names is that there's tremendous variety. You know, there was kind of those can't misses like the Nick Sabans and the Urban Meyers, but who thought Dabo Swinney would be the coach that he's turned out to be? Who thought, you know, Boise State promoting their offensive coordinator, Chris Peterson, would lead to the greatest stretch for a non-power program, you know, probably in the sport's history? So, you know, it just shows that you have to be creative as a school and maybe go against the grain. I know that I certainly was surprised by the Herm Edwards hire, a little bit less surprised by the Mac Brown hire, but so far both of those are working out. And, you know, despite both of them being older coaches, they have energy and they also aren't afraid to recruit. And those are two qualities that are going to help both of them going forward.
Yep. Really appreciate the visit and good piece on Maurice Claret. We had Ryan Leaf on here recently. We had a great conversation with him about his journey and his comeback and trying to come back from, you know, a lot of image repair. And it's cool when we see stories like this, right? Maurice Claret and Ryan Leaf, we can state a lot of examples, and a lot of times they don't ever come back, and that's what they're always remembered for. But I always, you know, I think we root in this country for stories like this. And what a turnaround. Really enjoyed the piece. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it is a country of second chances, and I've had a chance to work with Ryan on SiriusXM. He's a great guy. He's done great work, and both he and Maurice do inspire a lot of people with what they've done after they finished playing. So, yeah, appreciate you guys having me on to talk about this.
Continue to be safe, Adam. Thanks for the visit.
You too. Thank you.
All right, Adam Rittenberg, ESPN's senior writer covering college football. We'll come back and put a bow on the second hour. Tim Hasselbeck will join us at the top of the third hour at high noon. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.